Let's bring in somebody who's very familiar with the platform. We've got Matt Perrault, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, director of the Center on Technology Policy. Matt's also a former policy director at Facebook. Matt, let me just get your response to what has transpired here with your former employer, Frances Haugen, as Jared said, a very credible whistleblower who has been out front in calling Facebook on what she says are misleading statements that have come out with the understanding of the impact the platform had, especially on young kids.
Thanks so much, Akiko. It certainly is bold and courageous for Frances Haugen to come forward the way that she did. And I also would like to applaud the reporting that the Wall Street Journal has done. Those reporters have a tremendous amount of integrity. They're incredibly impressive journalists. I do think the issue here is a very complicated one, though. The research that came to light didn't just show that Instagram had a negative effect on teens and their own self-image. It actually showed that a significant number of people who are on the platform, for them, it actually has no effect. And then for about 40%, the data showed that it actually has a positive effect. So I think the question then becomes not just how do you address the harm, but what are the trade-offs between the good the product does in the world and the bad the product does in the world? For that reason, I'm not sure that tobacco is necessarily the best analogy, because something like warning labels, for instance, on tobacco products, I'm not sure what the downside is of that. But if you were to constrain expression on Instagram, you would be getting rid of presumably the problems, and that would be a good thing. But you might also be getting rid of the benefits, and that would be a bad thing. I think those are really difficult questions.
Yeah, and let me follow up on something Akiko said and just get back to this flawed big tobacco analogy that we keep referencing. Akiko said that there were all kinds of outside experts that had evidence about what tobacco was doing to people. And in this case, Facebook is such a closed book that nobody really knows what's going on. In fact, that was a big part of our impetus for coming forward, that nobody else knows what's happening inside Facebook. Part of this gets down to social governance issues in the company, that I think there were some things put before the board or the shareholders in May that were trying to remove a little bit of Mark Zuckerberg's super voting power. But what do you see as potential solutions here to the fact that Facebook is, in fact, such a closed and black book here?
So I actually have a different view of the main issue going on. I think there's a lot of transparency about what happens at Facebook. There are leaks almost on a daily basis from senior level decision-making meetings at the company about what's going on. I think there's a tremendous amount of transparency. And I think that actually is a challenge for internal decision-making at Facebook. If you're a Facebook employee and you want to raise a controversial view in a meeting, I think it's very difficult to do that right now with the assurance that what you say in a meeting is not going to become public. There's just a tremendous amount of leaking. Now, is it the case that researcher access to data, the regimes governing whether researchers like me in my capacity now at UNC would be able to have access to data? That process is unbelievably broken. Tech companies, I think, are concerned about the risk that they might face when they disclose data to researchers. And researchers are concerned that they might get retribution from companies if they mishandle the data in some way. So that's an issue that we really need Congress to fix. We need a better regime for researcher access to data so these issues can be studied more effectively than they have been to date.
Matt, it feels like there's a larger question here about to what extent Mark Zuckerberg, as well as Sheryl Sandberg, are aware of what's happening on the platform. Whether, in fact, you know, he knows that some of the algorithms Frances Haugen's talked about does, in fact, incite a lot of emotion, anger in many cases, whether, in fact, he knows some of the disinformation, misinformation that's happening on the platform. How much of the problems she's addressing, you think, has to do with just the fact that the company has become so big?
So Facebook is a user-generated content platform. That makes it different from traditional media companies. You can easily share information on Facebook, whereas with traditional media companies, you need to get their permission before they publish information. That makes it fundamentally different, and it means that user-generated content platforms will have a range of different types of content, including content that you and I might find to be objectionable or even content that might be harmful. I think Facebook is very aware of that issue, and they try to address it, but the fundamental nature of a content platform that's a user-generated content platform in which people can share information freely is that there will be problematic information. I think given the nature of the product, what we need here is for Congress to not just hold hearings, to not just make statements about the problem, but to actually outline what the rules should be in areas like online content. And I think it will be impossible for them to make rules that don't have really significant consequences. We might want there to be less sharing on platforms like Instagram because we have concerns about some of the harm that might be associated with some of the content that's shared. But if we make those decisions and government takes a much more restrictive approach to speech on platforms, we will lose a lot of the benefits too. I think it's best for those decisions to not necessarily just be made by CEOs like Mark Zuckerberg or CEOs of other major tech platforms, but for those decisions to be made by Congress. And so we really need to see Congress step up.
Matt, there is a larger question about just, you know, to what extent this is going to impact the growth of Facebook and the growth that we've seen on platforms. And I want to see if we can pull up this Piper Sandler survey that came out that points to the platforms teens are using today, the social media platforms for teens are the favorite ones. Snapchat coming at the very top, 35%, TikTok at 30%, Instagram at 22%. I mean, we're talking about Instagram trying to increase engagement on their platform as well. But if you talk about those levers that needed to be added in here, if we're talking about the safety of the platform, how much of that do you think comes at the expense of growth?
I think it's really hard to make that determination, but I think what you see in that slide is a really important dynamic in the tech sector right now, which is there's aggressive competition for tech platforms for many different audiences, including teen audiences. And that means that all those different platforms can offer different competing value propositions to their users about what would make them most effective, what would create the most valuable user experience. I think that's a really important dynamic that's going to hopefully lead to better and better products. If Congress sees examples of market failure, like cases where that competition is producing negative effects on society, and those effects aren't properly borne by the companies themselves, then that's an area where regulation would be really productive, and Congress can play a role in shaping the nature of that competition.
I want to read you a quote. There's a really interesting discussion going on right now at the hearing, and this is what Haugen just had to say about engagement-based ranking. Dangers of engagement-based ranking are that Facebook knows the content that elicits an extreme reaction from you is more likely to get a click, a comment, or a reshare, and saying, I've spent most of my career working on systems like engagement-based ranking. When I come to you and say these things, I'm basically damning 10 years of my own work. And then she gets into some of the possible solutions, saying that Section 230 should be amended to make Facebook responsible for their engagement-based rankings. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this discussion.
So I think amending Section 230 is likely to actually be very positive for companies like Facebook. Changing Section 230 is going to entrench large tech companies that can spend an immense amount of money and devote an immense number of employees to moderating content on their platforms. Section 230 actually means that platforms don't need to devote as much as many resources to content moderation and to compliance costs. And that actually makes it possible for a range of different platforms, including smaller platforms, to survive. So I think keeping the core components of Section 230 in place are really important, although Congress could certainly legislate in key areas. Like Congress could modernize law on incitement to riot, for instance, or Congress could pass a law criminalizing voter suppression, which doesn't currently exist at the federal level. So even with Section 230 in place, there's still an important role for Congress to play.
Matt Perrault, appreciate you hopping on. Always good to get your insight. He's the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, director of the Center of Technology Policy, and of course, former Facebook policy director as well.